My name is Hadrick Voss, and I served as the Vox caster aboard the salvage vessel Bone Picker when we encountered the drifting fragment in the outer reaches of Segmentum Obscurus. The massive chunk of Blackstone Fortress hung motionless against the void like a diseased organ torn from some primordial beast, its ancient human architecture twisted into impossible angles where the original structure had been sheared away by weapons fire that must have been unleashed millennia ago. The fragment stretched nearly 3 kilometers from its jagged bow section to the collapsed stern, where entire decks had been compressed into metallic accordion folds. What remained of the fortress's characteristic black stone hull bore deep scorch marks and impact craters, evidence of whatever catastrophic battle had reduced this once mighty imperial stronghold to cosmic debris. Through the Bone Picker's auger arrays, I watched Captain Morvan study the readings with the desperate hunger of a man who had not eaten in weeks. Our ship's life support systems had been failing for the better part of 2 months, recycling the same stale air through filters that should have been replaced before we left port. The atmospheric scrubbers wheezed and coughed like a dying man's lungs, and the temperature regulators fluctuated wildly between freezing cold and sweltering heat. We needed the Archaeotech bounty from this salvage operation to afford repairs, or we would all suffocate in the void long before reaching the next Imperial port. Standard protocols demanded we report any discovery of ancient fortress fragments to the nearest Adeptus Mechanicus facility, but such bureaucratic niceties were luxuries we could not afford. The tech priests would claim salvage rights and leave us with nothing but a pat on the head and empty bellies. Captain Morvan made the decision to board immediately, consequences be damned. The boarding party consisted of myself, Engine Seer Thelian, and 3 deckhands whose names I had never bothered to learn properly during our months together in the cramped confines of the Bone Picker. We approached the fortress fragment in our single remaining boarding craft, its hull scarred by micrometeorite impacts and jury-rigged repairs that spoke to our vessel's declining fortunes. The breach we selected lay along what had once been a primary corridor, now exposed to vacuum where the outer hull had been torn away. Emergency bulkheads had sealed automatically during whatever disaster had befallen the fortress, creating an airlock of sorts within the twisted wreckage. Our cutting torches made quick work of the ancient blast doors, revealing a dark passage that seemed to swallow the beams of our lumens like hungry mouths. The moment we stepped inside, I felt the oppressive weight of the Blackstone pressing down upon us. The characteristic material that gave these fortresses their name absorbed light in ways that defied natural physics, creating shadows that moved independently of our positions and seemed to writhe with malevolent purpose. Our portable lumens, powerful enough to illuminate the Bone Picker's cargo bay, barely managed to push back the darkness more than a few meters ahead. Strange growths covered portions of the corridor walls, pulsing with an alien rhythm that made my stomach churn. The Xenos parasites had clearly made themselves at home in the abandoned fortress, their translucent bodies filled with bioluminescent fluids that cast sickly green and purple hues across the black stone. The growths formed patterns that hurt to look at directly, geometric arrangements that seemed to shift and change when observed peripherally. My chronometer began malfunctioning within minutes of our entry, its digital display flickering between impossible times and dates that predated the founding of the Imperium. The device would show standard Terran time for several seconds before jumping to readings that claimed we had been inside the fortress for days, then reset to show negative time intervals that made no mathematical sense. The Vox communication system proved equally unreliable. When I attempted to establish contact with the Bone Picker, my transmission was answered by static filled with whispered fragments of high Gothic prayers. The words were too distorted to make out clearly, but I recognized the cadence of Imperial litanies spoken in voices that sounded ancient and weary. Sometimes the static would clear for brief moments, allowing normal communication, but these intervals grew shorter and less frequent as we ventured deeper into the fortress. Thelian's Auspex readings showed massive interference patterns that defied explanation. The device's machine spirit seemed confused by the Blackstone's properties, displaying energy signatures that fluctuated wildly between dormant and highly active states. The Engine Seer muttered technical prayers under his breath, but his augmetic implants sparked occasionally when he tried to interface directly with the fortress's systems. The deckhands grew increasingly nervous as we progressed through the twisting corridors. Their movements became jerky and paranoid, constantly checking over their shoulders as if expecting something to emerge from the darkness behind us. One of them, a thin man with ritual scarification covering his arms, kept insisting he could hear movement in the walls, though the rest of us detected nothing beyond the occasional groan of settling metal. The fortress's layout made no sense according to any architectural principles I knew. Corridors that should have led to the central command structure instead curved back upon themselves in impossible loops. Passages that appeared straight from one angle revealed sharp turns when approached from different directions. We marked our path with phosphor paint, but the glowing symbols seemed to fade more quickly than they should have, as if the Blackstone itself was absorbing the luminescent material. The temperature within the fortress fluctuated unpredictably, creating pockets of intense cold that made our breath visible in the recycled air from our suits, followed by areas of stifling heat that caused our equipment to overheat. The environmental readings made no sense, showing atmospheric pressure that changed from room to room despite the sealed nature of the structure. Strange sounds echoed through the corridors at irregular intervals. Sometimes we heard the distant grinding of machinery that should not have been functional after so many years of abandonment. Other times, a rhythmic tapping would emanate from behind the walls, like fingers drumming against metal in a pattern that almost resembled Imperial code signals, but remained just beyond comprehension. The Xeno's growths became more prevalent as we moved deeper into the fortress. They formed clusters around what had once been Imperial shrine alcoves, their alien flesh wrapped around sacred symbols and holy icons in a mockery of proper veneration. The parasites seemed to pulse in response to our presence, their bioluminescent fluids brightening whenever we passed nearby. My skin began to itch beneath my void suit, a persistent sensation that no amount of scratching could relieve. The others showed similar signs of discomfort, constantly adjusting their equipment and checking their seals despite the environmental readings showing acceptable atmospheric conditions. Something about the fortress was affecting us on a level that our instruments could not measure. The walls themselves seemed to watch us. I found myself glancing at the Blackstone surfaces, certain that I had seen movement in my peripheral vision, only to find nothing but the same alien growths and twisted architecture. The sensation of being observed grew stronger with each passing hour, until it felt like invisible eyes were tracking our every movement through the darkened passages. Our progress slowed as the corridors became increasingly maze-like. Passages that we had mapped as leading toward the fortress's core instead deposited us in chambers we had already explored, despite our careful navigation. The phosphor markers we had left behind were sometimes missing entirely, while others appeared in locations we had never visited. The deckhands' nervousness escalated into barely controlled panic. Their movements became erratic and unpredictable, causing them to bump into walls and trip over debris that should have been easily avoided. The scarred man began muttering prayers under his breath, his words growing more frantic with each passing minute. Thelion's augmetic implants continued to malfunction, sparking whenever he attempted to interface with the fortress's dormant systems. The engine seer's frustration was evident as his mechanical components failed to provide the reliable readings he needed to understand the structure's layout and function. His servo skull companion had begun emitting distressed binary cant, its machine's spirit clearly agitated by something it could detect but not communicate. The Vox static grew louder and more persistent until it became a constant background presence that made concentration difficult. The whispered prayers within the interference seemed to be growing more urgent, though the words remained indistinct. Sometimes I thought I could make out individual phrases, fragments of Imperial doctrine mixed with what sounded like pleas for mercy or forgiveness. As we rounded another corner in what should have been a straight corridor, we found ourselves facing a chamber that had not appeared on any of our previous scans. The room stretched beyond the reach of our lumens, its ceiling lost in darkness above. The walls were covered entirely in the pulsing Xeno's growths, their alien geometries forming patterns that seemed to shift and writhe when observed directly. The chamber stretched before us like the throat of some massive predator, its walls undulating with the rhythmic pulse of the Xeno's growths that had claimed every surface. I stepped forward cautiously, my boots crunching on debris that scattered across the floor in patterns too regular to be random. The sound echoed strangely in the vast space, returning to us as distorted whispers that seemed to mock our presence. My chronometer had given up any pretense of accurate timekeeping, its display now cycling through symbols I did not recognize. The device felt warm against my wrist, uncomfortably so, as if the alien influence permeating the fortress was affecting even the most basic Imperial technology. I tried to estimate how long we had been inside based on our air consumption, but the recycling systems in our void suits were behaving erratically, sometimes working too efficiently and other times struggling to process the atmosphere we were breathing. The phosphor markers we had placed throughout our journey were failing faster now. I watched one of the glowing symbols fade as we passed it, the luminescent paint seeming to drain away into the blackstone itself. When I turned back to check our previous markers, several had vanished entirely, leaving us with an increasingly unreliable map of our route through the fortress fragment. Thelion's servo skull had begun exhibiting disturbing behavior patterns. The mechanical construct would hover near walls covered in Xeno's growths, its sensors extended as if trying to interface with the alien organisms. When the engine seer attempted to recall the device, it would respond sluggishly, its movements jerky and unpredictable. The binary cant it emitted had shifted from standard Imperial protocols to something that sounded almost musical, a series of tones and frequencies that made my teeth ache. The deckhands were deteriorating rapidly. The scarred man had developed a pronounced tremor in his hands, making it difficult for him to operate his equipment properly. His breathing had become labored despite our suits showing normal atmospheric readings, and he kept glancing at the walls with an expression of growing terror. The other two showed similar symptoms, their movements becoming increasingly uncoordinated as we pressed deeper into the fortress. I began documenting the changes I observed in the fortress's architecture, though my notes became increasingly difficult to maintain as my stylus kept malfunctioning. The corridors we had traversed were definitely shifting when we were not directly observing them. Passages that had been 3 meters wide would narrow to barely accommodate our passage when we returned, forcing us to squeeze through spaces that should have been impossible given our previous measurements. The Xeno's growths were not merely decorating the walls anymore. They were actively reshaping the fortress's interior structure, their alien flesh pushing through gaps in the blackstone and expanding to create new passages while sealing others. I watched in horror as a doorway we had marked for later exploration slowly closed as organic membranes grew across its opening, the alien tissue pulsing with bioluminescent veins that cast sickly patterns of light across the corridor. The sounds from within the walls had become more frequent and disturbing. What had started as occasional tapping now resembled deliberate excavation, as if something was carving new tunnels through the fortress's superstructure. The grinding and scraping noises suggested creatures of considerable size moving through spaces that should not have existed, creating their own pathways through the ancient Imperial construction. Our formation began to break down as the changing layout forced us to navigate increasingly narrow passages in single file. Communication became difficult as the Vox interference intensified, turning our transmissions into garbled fragments punctuated by those whispered prayers that seemed to emanate from the fortress itself. The static had developed an almost hypnotic quality, a rhythmic pulse that matched the beating of my heart and made concentration nearly impossible. The temperature fluctuations were becoming more extreme and unpredictable. We would move from areas of bone-chilling cold that made our breath visible through our helmet visors to pockets of sweltering heat that caused our suit's cooling systems to work overtime. The environmental readings made no scientific sense, showing pressure differentials that should have been impossible in a sealed structure and atmospheric compositions that shifted from room to room. Thelion's augmetic implants were sparking more frequently now, sending cascades of electrical discharge across his robes whenever he attempted to interface with the fortress's systems. The engine seer had become increasingly agitated, his mechanical components clearly struggling to process the alien influences that permeated every surface. His servo skull had begun to emit high-pitched whines that cut through the static on our Vox channels like rusty blades. The deckhand's behavior was becoming erratic in ways that went beyond simple fear. The scarred man had started walking in small circles when we stopped to rest, his movements following patterns that seemed to mirror the geometric arrangements of the Xeno's growths on the walls. The other two showed similar compulsive behaviors, touching surfaces they should have avoided and staring at the alien organisms with expressions of fascination rather than revulsion. My own condition was deteriorating as well. The persistent itching beneath my void suit had spread across my entire body, accompanied by a burning sensation that felt like insects crawling under my skin. My vision had begun to blur at the edges, and I found myself seeing movement in my peripheral vision that vanished when I turned to look directly. The fortress was affecting all of us in ways that our medical scanners could not detect or explain. The Vox static had evolved into something that almost resembled conversation, though the words remained just beyond comprehension. I could make out the cadence of questions and responses, as if invisible speakers were conducting discussions in chambers we could not reach. Sometimes the voices would rise in what sounded like argument or panic, only to fade back into the constant background interference that had become our unwelcome companion. We discovered evidence of previous explorers in a collapsed section where the fortress's original structure had been compromised. Scattered equipment bearing Imperial markings lay among the debris, corroded by exposure to whatever atmosphere had existed in the chamber before the hull breach. The gear was too old to be from any recent salvage operation, suggesting that others had found this fragment decades or perhaps centuries before us. The Xeno's growths had claimed these artifacts as well, their alien flesh wrapped around Imperial technology in ways that made my stomach turn. A Vox caster similar to my own was partially consumed by translucent organisms that pulsed with the same rhythm as the larger masses covering the walls. The device's display still flickered occasionally, showing fragments of data that predated our arrival by years. Our progress through the fortress had slowed to a crawl as the passages became increasingly maze-like. Corridors that appeared straight would curve back upon themselves in impossible loops that defied the laws of physics. We would mark intersections with phosphor paint only to find ourselves approaching the same junction from a direction that should have been geometrically impossible given our previous path. The deckhands were beginning to show signs of chemical exposure despite our sealed suits registering normal atmospheric conditions. Their speech had become slurred and confused, their words running together in ways that made communication difficult. The scarred man had developed a pronounced lisp that had not been present when we boarded the fortress, while the others showed similar degradation in their verbal abilities. Thelian's condition was perhaps the most disturbing. The Engineer's augmetic implants were not merely malfunctioning, but seemed to be adapting to the alien environment in ways that violated their original programming. His mechanical eye had begun tracking movements that the rest of us could not see, while his servo arm twitched in patterns that resembled the geometric arrangements of the Xeno's growths. The fortress's interior had become a living thing, reshaping itself according to alien logic that made navigation increasingly impossible. Passages we had mapped would extend themselves when we were not looking, stretching distances that should have taken minutes to traverse into journeys that consumed hours. New corridors appeared overnight, carved by burrowing creatures whose chittering could be heard echoing through the walls. During what should have been a routine sweep of a relic chamber filled with corrupted Imperial artifacts, we lost contact with Tech Adept Corvain. The experienced salvager had been examining a collection of data slates when the Vox transmission cut to static. His final words were interrupted by wet, tearing sounds that made my blood run cold, followed by inhuman chittering that seemed to come from multiple sources at once. We found his equipment scattered in an empty corridor that had not existed on our previous maps. Corvain's flak armor lay in pieces, torn apart by something with claws capable of shredding Imperial-grade protection. His augmetic implants were scattered among the debris, their machine spirits extinguished and their casings cracked open like broken eggs. The phosphor paint from his gear had been smeared across the walls in patterns that hurt to look at directly, but Corvain's screams continued to echo from within the walls themselves, growing more desperate and inhuman with each passing hour. The sound seemed to move through the fortress's structure, following us as we searched for his location. Sometimes the screaming would fade to whispers, only to return as agonized wails that penetrated even our sealed helmets. Whatever had taken him was keeping him alive, feeding on his suffering in ways that defied understanding. The remaining crew members showed increasing signs of paranoia and isolation as our formation completely broke down. The changing layout of the fortress made it impossible to maintain visual contact, and the Vox interference had become so severe that communication was reduced to brief, garbled fragments. We were alone in a structure that was actively working against us, surrounded by alien influences that were slowly driving us toward madness. The screaming from within the walls had changed. What began as Corvin's desperate cries had transformed into something that barely resembled human vocalization, a wet gurgling sound that rose and fell with the rhythmic pulsing of the Xeno's growths. I pressed my helmet against the blackstone surface, trying to determine his location, but the sound seemed to emanate from every direction at once, as if his voice was being channeled through the fortress's entire structure. The scarred deckhand had begun clawing at his void suit seals, insisting that something was crawling beneath the reinforced fabric. His movements had become increasingly frantic, and when I examined his equipment, I discovered microscopic perforations in the supposedly impenetrable material. The holes were too small to cause atmospheric breach, but large enough to allow something to penetrate the protective barrier. Whatever was making these punctures was doing so with surgical precision. Thelian's servo skull had stopped responding to commands entirely. The mechanical construct now followed patterns of its own design, hovering near sections of wall where the Xeno's growths were thickest. Its sensors extended toward the alien organisms with movements that resembled feeding behavior rather than standard reconnaissance protocols. When I attempted to retrieve the device manually, it emitted a piercing shriek that cut through our Vox static and sent waves of pain through my skull. The fortress's layout had become completely unstable. Corridors we had traversed moments before would seal themselves behind us with rapidly growing membranes of alien flesh. New passages appeared where solid walls had existed, their surfaces already coated with the pulsing organisms that seemed to anticipate our movements. The phosphor markers we left behind were being consumed by the growths, their luminescent material absorbed into the translucent bodies of the parasites. My chronometer had begun displaying symbols that hurt to look at directly. The device's screen showed geometric patterns that shifted and writhed like living things, accompanied by readings that claimed we had been inside the fortress for negative time intervals. The numbers would occasionally stabilize long enough to show what appeared to be standard imperial dating, but these moments of clarity revealed dates that predated the Great Crusade by millennia. The temperature fluctuations were becoming more extreme and localized. I would step from areas of normal atmospheric conditions into pockets of air so cold that frost formed on my visor, only to immediately encounter zones of heat so intense that my suit's cooling system strained to maintain safe internal temperatures. The environmental readings made no sense according to any physical laws I understood, showing pressure differentials that should have torn the structure apart. The Vox interference had evolved beyond simple static into something that resembled organized communication. I could distinguish individual voices within the electronic noise, though the words remained incomprehensible. The conversations seemed to involve multiple participants, their tones ranging from pleading whispers to agonized screams. Sometimes I recognized fragments of High Gothic mixed with languages I had never heard before, all layered together in a cacophony that made concentration impossible. During our exploration of what had once been a command chamber, we discovered the first evidence of the Xeno's parasite's true purpose. The walls were covered with what initially appeared to be decorative tapestries, but closer examination revealed these to be the preserved remains of previous victims. Human skin had been stretched across sections of blackstone with meticulous care, the tissue kept supple and intact through some alien preservation process. Corvin's face stared back at us from one such display, his features frozen in an expression of absolute terror and agony. His skin had been removed with surgical precision and mounted like a trophy, but the tissue was not merely preserved. Microscopic tendrils emerged from behind the stretched flesh, manipulating his facial muscles to create the illusion of movement. His mouth opened and closed soundlessly, as if he was trying to communicate warnings we could not hear. The realization struck me with nauseating clarity. The parasites were not simply killing their victims, but using them as living canvases for their alien artistry. The screams we heard from within the walls were not echoes of past deaths, but the ongoing suffering of those who had been incorporated into the fortress's structure while still conscious. They were being kept alive through the feeding tubes that emerged from the organic growths. Their bodies slowly dissolved to provide nutrients, while their minds remained aware of every sensation. Other sections of wall displayed similar grotesque exhibitions. I recognized equipment markings from Imperial salvage operations spanning several centuries, suggesting that this fragment had been claiming victims for far longer than we had initially suspected. Each preserved skin showed the same expression of eternal torment, their faces manipulated by the alien tendrils to mouth silent pleas for mercy or death. The deckhands were showing advanced signs of exposure to whatever toxins the parasites were releasing into the atmosphere. Their movements had become uncoordinated and jerky, their speech reduced to incomprehensible muttering, punctuated by occasional moments of terrifying clarity. The scarred man had begun scratching at his skin with such intensity that blood seeped through his void suit's fabric, though he seemed unaware of the self-inflicted wounds. Thelian's condition had deteriorated beyond recognition. His augmetic implants were sparking continuously now, sending cascades of electrical discharge across his robes with each attempted interface. His mechanical eye had begun tracking movements that followed the same geometric patterns as the Xeno's growths, while his servo arm twitched in rhythmic sequences that matched the pulsing of the alien organisms. The engine seer's remaining organic components showed signs of cellular breakdown, his skin taking on a translucent quality that revealed the network of veins beneath. The fortress was actively hunting us now. Passages would seal themselves to force us toward specific chambers where the concentration of parasites was highest. New corridors appeared with surfaces already prepared for the mounting of fresh skin, their walls bearing anchor points designed to stretch human tissue across the blackstone. The alien intelligence controlling the structure was herding us like livestock toward whatever processing facility lay at the fortress's heart. My own condition was rapidly declining. The persistent itching beneath my void suit had evolved into a burning sensation that felt like acid eating through my flesh. When I examined my equipment, I discovered that the microscopic perforations were spreading across every surface, allowing the parasites' feeding tubes to penetrate my protective gear. The sensation of insects crawling under my skin was not paranoid delusion, but the actual movement of alien organisms that had already begun the process of consumption. The Vox static had become a constant roar of overlapping voices, all speaking in the same pleading tones that suggested prolonged torture. I began to recognize individual speakers within the electronic chaos, their voices familiar from previous salvage operations that had supposedly ended in routine equipment failures or navigation errors. The fortress had been claiming victims for centuries, adding their voices to the growing chorus of the damned. We discovered evidence of the parasite's reproductive cycle in a chamber where the walls pulsed with unusual intensity. Cocoon-like structures hung from the ceiling, their translucent membranes revealing partially dissolved human forms suspended in nutrient fluid. The victims inside these feeding pods were still alive, their eyes tracking our movements with desperate awareness. Their bodies were being slowly broken down to provide sustenance for developing alien spawn, the process designed to extract maximum nutritional value while prolonging consciousness. The sight of these incubation chambers filled me with a horror that transcended rational fear. The parasites were not merely feeding on human flesh, but using our species as breeding stock for their offspring. Each victim was kept alive and aware throughout the entire gestation process, their suffering providing some essential component for the developing aliens. The fortress fragment was not a derelict structure, but an active nursery for creatures that viewed humanity as nothing more than raw material. The remaining deckhands were beginning to show signs of the same cellular breakdown I had observed in Thelian. Their skin was becoming increasingly translucent, revealing the network of feeding tubes that had penetrated their bodies through the microscopic perforations in their void suits. The parasites were consuming them from within, dissolving their tissue at a rate carefully calibrated to maintain consciousness while extracting nutrients for the growing colony. My equipment was failing at an accelerating rate. The phosphor paint I used for navigation markers was being absorbed by the parasites faster than I could apply it, leaving us without any reliable method of mapping our route through the shifting corridors. The Voxcaster had become completely unreliable, its transmissions now consisting entirely of the agonized voices of previous victims mixed with inhuman chittering that seemed to come from the developing spawn within the incubation chambers. The fortress's architecture had become completely fluid, reshaping itself according to the parasite's needs rather than any human logic. Passages would extend or contract based on our movements, creating a maze that was impossible to navigate using conventional methods. The structure was actively working to separate us, isolating individual crew members in chambers where the concentration of feeding organisms was highest. During our attempt to locate an exit route, we lost the second deckhand to the same fate that had claimed Corbin. His screams joined the chorus emanating from the walls, but his voice retained more human characteristics than the others, suggesting that the consumption process was still in its early stages. The sound of his agony followed us through the corridors, a constant reminder of what awaited us if we failed to escape the fortress's influence. The scarred deckhand had begun exhibiting behavior that suggested advanced neurological damage. His movements followed the same geometric patterns as the Xeno's growths, his body swaying in rhythm with the pulsing of the alien organisms. When he spoke, his words came out in fragments of languages I did not recognize, mixed with what sounded like technical specifications for biological processes that defied human understanding. The temperature within the fortress had stabilized at levels that were barely tolerable for human survival. The atmosphere itself seemed to be changing, becoming thicker and more humid as the parasites altered the environmental conditions to suit their reproductive needs. My void suit's life support systems were struggling to process the alien compounds that were replacing the standard atmospheric gases, and I could taste something metallic and organic in the recycled air. Thelian's servo skull had begun emitting sounds that resembled the chittering of the developing spawn, its machine spirit apparently corrupted by prolonged exposure to the alien influence. The device now moved in patterns that mirrored the parasite's behavior, its sensors extended toward potential hosts with movements that suggested predatory intent rather than reconnaissance. The engine seer himself had stopped responding to external stimuli, his remaining organic components focused entirely on some internal process that was reshaping his neural pathways. The walls themselves had become active participants in our capture. Sections of blackstone would shift to block potential escape routes while opening passages that led deeper into the fortress's interior. The alien organisms coating every surface pulsed with increasing intensity when we approached, their bioluminescent displays creating patterns that seemed designed to induce disorientation and compliance in human subjects. The fortress had led me to its heart, though I no longer possessed any illusion that I was navigating these passages through my own will. The corridors had narrowed to barely accommodate my shoulders, forcing me to move in single file through spaces that pulsed with alien life. My void suit registered atmospheric pressure that fluctuated with each breath I took, as if the structure itself was breathing around me. The microscopic feeding tubes had multiplied beneath my protective gear, creating a network of punctures that allowed the parasite's influence to seep directly into my bloodstream. The last of my companions had vanished 3 hours ago, though time had become meaningless in this place where my chronometer displayed symbols that shifted like living things. The scarred deckhand's final transmission had been cut short by wet tearing sounds, followed by his voice joining the chorus of the damned that echoed through the fortress walls. Thelian had simply stopped moving during our passage through a chamber where the Xeno's growths formed geometric patterns too complex for human minds to process. His augmetic implants had sparked one final time before falling silent, leaving his body standing motionless while something behind his mechanical eye began to glow with bioluminescent light. The passage opened into a vast chamber that stretched beyond the reach of my failing lumens. The ceiling disappeared into darkness above, supported by pillars of twisted blackstone that had been reshaped by centuries of alien influence. but it was the walls that filled me with a horror so complete that my legs nearly buckled beneath me. Hundreds of human skins stretched across the chamber's surfaces like grotesque banners, each one perfectly preserved and held taut by anchor points driven deep into the ancient stone. Every face was frozen in an expression of absolute agony, their features manipulated by microscopic tendrils that emerged from behind the stretched tissue. The skins belonged to salvagers, tech adepts, Imperial Navy personnel, and countless others who had encountered this drifting fragment across the centuries. Some bore the ritual scarification of Hive World gangers, others showed the pale complexion of Voidborn crews, but all shared the same look of eternal torment as alien organisms writhed visibly beneath their preserved flesh. The parasites had turned each skin into a feeding membrane for their developing offspring. Translucent larvae moved beneath the human tissue, their forms clearly visible through the preserved dermis as they consumed nutrients extracted from the nervous systems that had been carefully maintained within each display. The victims' neural networks remained fully functional, their consciousness trapped within their own flayed hide, while alien spawn fed on the electrical impulses generated by their ongoing suffering. My Vox caster crackled with transmissions from the mounted skins, their voices forming a choir of the damned that had been broadcasting their agony for decades or centuries. Each face mouthed words of warning and desperation, their vocal cords long since removed, but their consciousness still attempting to communicate through the alien tendrils that controlled their facial muscles. The electronic interference that had plagued our communications was revealed to be the combined transmissions of every victim the fortress had claimed, their final messages overlapping into an incomprehensible cacophony of despair. The chamber's floor was covered with a thick carpet of organic matter that squelched beneath my boots with each step. The substance pulsed with the same rhythm as the wall-mounted skins, its surface marked by channels that carried nutrient fluids between the various feeding stations. Cocoon-like structures hung from anchor points throughout the space, their translucent membranes revealing partially dissolved human forms in various stages of consumption. The victims inside these incubation pods tracked my movements with eyes that still held traces of human intelligence, their bodies serving as living factories for the alien spawn that would eventually emerge to continue the cycle. My suit's environmental readings had become completely unreliable, showing atmospheric compositions that changed from moment to moment as the parasites adjusted the chamber's conditions to optimize their breeding process. The air itself felt thick and organic, carrying the metallic taste of blood mixed with compounds that my human physiology was never meant to process. The microscopic feeding tubes beneath my protective gear had multiplied exponentially, creating a network that extended throughout my body and began the slow process of cellular breakdown that would prepare my tissue for preservation. The fortress's true nature was finally revealed in all its horrific glory. This was not merely a derelict structure that had been claimed by Xeno's parasites, but a carefully designed breeding facility that had been operating for millennia. The ancient Blackstone Fortress had been converted into a nursery for creatures that required living human tissue to reproduce, their offspring dependent on the electrical impulses generated by conscious nervous systems to complete their development. Every victim who had entered this place had become part of an eternal gallery of suffering, their preserved skins serving as feeding membranes for generation after generation of alien spawn. The walls showed evidence of the parasites' meticulous planning. Sections of Blackstone had been carved with channels designed to route nutrient fluids between feeding stations, while specialized anchor points had been installed to support the weight of preserved human tissue. The creatures had spent centuries perfecting their techniques, learning to extract maximum nutritional value from each victim while maintaining their consciousness for extended periods. The screams that echoed through the fortress were not merely expressions of pain, but essential components of the breeding process, the victim's neural activity providing some crucial element required for the spawn's development. My own transformation was accelerating beyond my ability to control. The feeding tubes had penetrated deep into my muscle tissue, beginning the process of cellular dissolution that would prepare my body for preservation. The sensation was indescribable, like being slowly digested from within while remaining fully aware of every stage of the consumption process. My skin had begun to separate from the underlying tissue in perfectly preserved sheets, the parasite's enzymes ensuring that the dermis remained intact while the supporting structure was gradually dissolved. The alien organisms had refined their techniques over centuries of practice, learning to keep their victims conscious throughout the entire flensing process. My nervous system remained fully functional even as my body was systematically dismantled, the parasite's feeding tubes delivering compounds that prevented shock or unconsciousness while maximizing the extraction of nutrients from my dissolving tissue. The agony was beyond human comprehension, a constant burning sensation that intensified with each passing moment as more of my body was converted into raw material for the developing spawn. The chamber's lighting came from the bioluminescent displays of countless larvae writhing beneath the preserved human skins. Their alien forms pulsed with patterns that seemed designed to induce compliance in their victims, the rhythmic flashing creating a hypnotic effect that made resistance increasingly difficult. My vision began to blur as the feeding tubes reached my optical nerves, but the parasites were careful to maintain my sight so that I could witness my own transformation into another component of their eternal gallery. The vox transmissions from the wall-mounted skins had become more urgent, their overlapping voices forming a desperate chorus that warned of the fate awaiting any who entered the fortress fragment. But their warnings came too late for me, as they had for every other victim whose preserved remains decorated this chamber of horrors. The aliens had perfected their trap over centuries of practice, learning to manipulate the fortress's layout and atmospheric conditions to guide their prey directly into the breeding facility. My chronometer had stopped functioning entirely, its display showing only the geometric patterns that seemed to be the parasite's written language. Time had become meaningless in this place where consciousness persisted long after the body had been consumed, where victims remained aware for decades or centuries, while their preserved tissue served as feeding membranes for alien offspring. The concept of death had been rendered obsolete by creatures that viewed human suffering as a renewable resource to be harvested indefinitely. The feeding tubes had reached my spine, beginning the delicate process of preserving my nervous system while dissolving the surrounding tissue. The parasite's techniques were refined through countless generations of practice, their enzymes designed to maintain neural function while extracting maximum nutritional value from each victim. My consciousness would remain intact throughout the preservation process, trapped within my own skin as it was stretched across the chamber walls to serve as a breeding membrane for the next generation of spawn. The alien forms closing in around me moved with purpose that spoke of intelligence far beyond simple predatory instinct. These creatures had spent millennia perfecting their reproductive cycle, learning to use human consciousness as a crucial component in their offspring's development. The electrical impulses generated by ongoing neural activity provided some essential element that could not be artificially replicated, making living human tissue an irreplaceable resource in their breeding process. My skin had begun to separate completely from the underlying muscle, the preservation process maintaining the tissue's integrity while preparing it for mounting on the chamber walls. The sensation was like being flayed alive in slow motion, each nerve ending remaining functional to provide maximum sensory input for the developing larvae that would soon take up residence beneath my preserved dermis. The parasites had learned to extract every possible benefit from their victims, wasting nothing in their efficient conversion of human suffering into alien reproduction. The fortress fragment would continue its journey through the void, a drifting sepulcher that served as both nursery and trap for the creatures that had claimed it. Future salvage crews would encounter the same shifting corridors and alien influences that had led us to this chamber, their fate sealed from the moment they breached the outer hull. The parasites would continue to refine their techniques with each new victim, adding fresh voices to the chorus of the damned while expanding their eternal gallery of preserved human tissue. My final log entry was recorded as the feeding tubes reached my brain stem, the vox caster's failing circuits somehow managing to transmit my thoughts even as my vocal cords were dissolved by the parasite's enzymes. The message would join the overlapping transmissions of countless other victims, adding my voice to the electronic interference that served as both warning and lure for future prey. My consciousness was being carefully preserved along with my nervous system, ensuring that I would remain aware of my fate for whatever eternity awaited in this chamber of horrors. The last thing I saw before my optical nerves were severed was my own skin being stretched across a prepared section of wall, the anchor points driven deep into the blackstone to support the weight of my preserved tissue. The microscopic tendrils that would manipulate my facial features were already emerging from behind the mounting surface, preparing to use my expression as another silent plea for mercy that would never come. I had become part of the fortress's eternal gallery, my suffering transformed into sustenance for alien spawn that would feed on my consciousness until the heat death of the universe itself.